All right. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Buffalo Bills Maybe Next Year, the only podcast that's kind of a little sleepy but sad. My name's Frank.
I'm Scott.
And I am the evil Dunedion, otherwise known as Paul.
Yes, Paul is coming to us live from I believe you said Danish Renaissance era painting.
Yes, yes. Yeah. That's essentially what my look is right now with the lighting in the background. It's cool. Now
a Danish Renaissance painting in the center of the earth, just to be
right.
Clear.
With the lights off. Because who told those guys, okay, we're going to, like, you know, they probably were like, well, I don't want to pay for the upgraded background to the artist, so I don't need, like, flowers, just do a black one. But then they wear black to the sitting, and the guy didn't even have to paint anything except a little bit of the face, and then it's just this black hole behind them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe they thought it was artsy.
Yeah. And I'm within a red circle, too. This reminds me of a CD cover from the 90s, and I can't think of the CD, so I'm going to have to actually look for a CD during the course of this podcast.
This is fascinating listening for all the podcasts.
The Metallica.
Would they rather we talk about the game? I mean, really?
Speaking of a black hole you can't quite put your finger on, the Buffalo Bills lost to the Oakland Raiders.
In the black hole, appropriately, is the Raiders' home is nicknamed.
Yes, the little bit of light that the Bills could shine was unable to escape Kyle Orton's ass, and it just kind of sucked in on itself and collapsed. And the event horizon that is the Buffalo Bills quarterback situation continues for 15 years and will never end because that's how physics works. Yeah, no, this is sorry, I got a little Stephen Hawking on some of you there, and it probably wasn't good physics. But anyway. The Bills are terrible, and everything is wrong with the universe. I think that's what we should take away from this game. Is that right?
Yep. Thanks, everyone. Good night.
I feel like those two are actually mutually exclusive, though, Frank, because if the Bills were good, wouldn't that by definition mean that the universe was in fact spinning off the axis that...
That's fair. Yeah, it could be that that's what the crazy pills are. The crazy pills would be the Bills had beat Oakland and everything had worked out. But as it stands, the Bills remain the Bills.
Let's put it this way. Last week, to give you some listeners may realize, at 3:30 p.m., I was 280 miles east of my podcast destination and was not going to miss the podcast for the world, to the point where I, like, flew back from Albany, joined the podcast late just to talk about the Packers game. This time, I was at work with no real outstanding projects at about 7 o'clock, and found about 20 minutes worth more of projects to work on to avoid talking about this game, or procrastinate talking about this game. Just how disappointing is it to see a team that you'd felt like had finally taken major steps, that at the very least was going to go to Foxborough for a showdown, that, you know, even if they lost, they were going into that last game with a chance to snap a streak and to do it in grand fashion against the Pats, and instead they fell flat.
Turd City. So the final score was 24 to 22, is that right?
26, 24.
24, right. Okay, sorry, just Yahoo was being slow. We had, of course, given up, and then Buffalo, you know, just like to make sure they had licked the bowl clean of all of our joy, scored a late touchdown and put themselves back in the position to steal one against really a terrible, terrible Raiders team that has a good defense, but not a great defense. I don't think it was a great defense. Buffalo had their chances. Kyle Orton, 32 of 49, which I don't know how this team doesn't know that 49 pass attempts is just not acceptable. Now, I guess there was some...
Look at that rush game. Is there an alternative besides running and passing that the Bills could try? Because neither of those things have really worked.
Yes, it's called punting.
Yeah, they do that. Yeah, they excel at punting, except when to punt and how. Yeah, I was leading in with the fact that, like, normally under normal circumstances we would be bitching about 40 plus pass attempts for Kyle Orton, but this week in fact the nine. Now look, you're right. The running game was terrible, but there was only 13 running attempts. So, I mean, how honest of an as bad as it was, 13. Carries for 13 yards, so they average 1 yard a carry as a team. That's still not enough carries to really consider it kind of consider like a good effort being put into the running game, in my mind. But we'll get a chance to talk about that. Fred Jackson, 6 carries for 10 yards, but 9 catches for 12 yards, so bringing his total to 15
9 catches for 90 yards.
Yeah, oh, stop reading the targets. Stop reading the targets, Frank.
You know, I'm having a rough, yeah, all right. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Maybe Next Year. Sorry, yes, 12 targets, 9 catches, 93 yards, which is funny because Fred Jackson had more catches than Sammy Watkins had targets, which was mentioned more than once today on the radio shows and whatnot, and how that's indicative of this terrible, throwing 3 yards on a 10-yard when you need 10 on third style of play that the Bills have adopted, which we can get into. Is that talent? Is that play calling? Is that what is that? So it was a gross game. It started very well with Buffalo getting a touchdown, but they quickly reverted to form. They seem to have made up for all the good that they created for themselves going into the Green Bay game. Scott, why don't you give us your impressions of the game as you were there with me at the local drinking institution.
With our wives watching this terrible, terrible game.
Was that it? Did we bring our wives and they jinxed it, or we jinxed it by feeling like it was an okay game to go to the bar to watch, or?
No, I mean, I think they were there for the Miami game and the first one, and we won that, and then they were there for the second Miami game and we lost that. And then this time, I feel like, again, we thought, you know, with the Raiders, you know, it's at least good chance that we'll win, pretty solid chance that we'll win. Yeah. I think I was definitely surprised at how effective the Raiders' run defense was. I think that definitely threw off our game of what we were trying to do. I think that and the early pass to Watkins gave the Nate Hackett the mistaken impression that this was, you know, Kurt Warner and the 99 Rams that he was running with and not, you know, the 2014 Bills. But to be fair, the offensive line played terrible. So it's easier to have a pass game to a certain extent with a terrible offensive line than it is with a run game, especially against a good run defense. And I think as far as the defense goes, you know, we kind of last week, we were apologizing for the defense being like, well, you know, if you got, Peyton Manning and Aaron Rodgers, you're going to spend more time focusing on the pass. And you'll give up some yards on the ground and just hope it doesn't bite you, you know, like it did in the Broncos game. And I think it's clear at this point that there's something a little more systematically wrong with the Bills' run defense because, you know, LaDavius Murray, is that the guy's name? 23 carries for 86 yards.
How many times have we had to figure out what a running back's name is who gashed the Bills after the fact?
Classic.
Yeah, Latavius. Now, some of that might have been Darius going down and to a
lesser extent. Some of it definitely was.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, a defense should not be defined by one player going down and the entire thing collapsing. To the extent that it did collapse, because it did collapse. I mean, there were wide open running lanes right up the middle, and Kyle Williams said it wasn't really the scheme, it was just people missing tackles. And it's just,
yeah,
if you want to play in the playoffs, if you want to be an excellent defense, a defense that can bring you to the Super Bowl, that's going to overcome the faults of the offense, you have to make some freaking tackles against the Raiders. You know, it's just one of those things. So I'm not surprised that it ended with a whimper and not with a bang, but it still hurts. And, you know, you just kind of see Kyle Williams and Fred Jackson after the game, and you're just like, I don't know about these guys. I don't know that it's going to happen for them.
Yeah, so maybe Kyle more so than Fred. I think Fred's a little closer to the door than Kyle is. But yeah. Paul, what did you make of the game in sunny Buffalo?
Yeah, it was actually sunny yesterday, but only literally, not metaphorically. You know, it was. I do going backwards from Scott's comments and your observations too, Frank. It is. I'm guessing next year will have to be the end of the line for Fred. I mean, how much more can he take yet? Here he was, the guy with 9 catches for 93 yards and their leading rusher on a day when no one could do anything on the ground. You know, he had 100 plus yards total offense, and yet no one else seemed to step up when they needed it. This game started so promisingly. The pass to Watkins, first of all, the Raiders 3 and out, which took 40 seconds, and then the the Sammy catch, I was just assuming, like, this is going to be a nice, easy day. The Bills even got some breaks from the officials, in my mind. I mean, we all know Robert Woods fumbled that ball. Everyone knows.
He did.
You can show me the NFL rule book and explain to me why that's not a fumble, but that's a fumble. You know, it's just, it's a stupid rule. But regardless, they had so many opportunities. They got the ball to start the second half, the chance to go up, went three and out. They had five straight three and outs. This offensive line, they got beaten in the trenches, and I think that's the cliche everyone loves to use, but it's true. I mean, up front, their offense just got manhandled. If you cut all five of those guys, how much worse could they be, really, by putting five right. other guys in there? And it's even sadder that they had two draft picks from this past draft who can't even crack the lineup because they haven't played well enough. The one who has not played well enough in his, you know, when he got in there, and the other was the second round pick, Cyrus Kanawanju, you know, who just hasn't even played well enough to be active all but one game.
Right.
So that was hugely depressing. And then the defense, third and 22. That's why I got to say they also gave up a third and 11 early in the game. You can't give up a third and 22 in a situation where, you know, a stop gives the offense the ball back with a chance where a field goal, gives you the win. And they did, you know. And I'm not even upset with Marone on the 4th-and-1 punt from the 46 because he had the exact right strategy. Pinned them deep. The defense on the first two plays made the Raiders lose 12 yards. Set up that third. Should have been a punt. The Bills would have the ball at their 40 with a first down instead of the 46 with a fourth down. And yet the defense couldn't come up big either. And we'll talk more about Jerry Hughes later, but I had to look at the stat sheet to make sure he played yesterday. Let's just put it that way. So,
yeah, and it's kind of it's tough on that because he's shown up all year. So, did he pick a bad day to have his day off? I guess so. But when is the good day to have your day off?
Right. Well, I think the day that not everyone else has their off day, and I think everyone right, has their off day.
And try and rotate the off days.
Yeah. Like Mario had it's funny. Mario had kind of a rough day against Green Bay last week. But you know what he did at the end? He got a strip sack that won the game. Right. You know, so that's what you hope for. So it's a very depressing game because this was a bad team, a team they should have beaten, a team that, yes, had played better at home, won their third straight at home, beat two teams that are arguably better than the Bills in Kansas City and San Francisco. But this game was there for the taking. The stakes were high, and yet this was very reminiscent of Buffalo-Miami last year. Miami came to Buffalo with everything to lose, and the Bills had nothing to gain. The Bills just stomped them. So it's kind of sad to be in the other position for this week 16 game.
You can kind of. I was just looking. Speaking of having off days, when Denora Searcy, Ron Brooks, and Aaron Williams are your leading tacklers, if you know enough to know that they play in the defensive backfield, you know that the team had a bad day. I mean, that's sort of you can kind of tell. Scott Chandler also had a solo tackle, like the as. <it's>, so I mean you can kind of like when you start seeing like the defensive line's not getting the tackles but the backfield is that's not good evidence either of a good game. 5 of 15 on third down. I'm sorry, 4 of 15 on third down for the Bills, 5 of 16 including that last third and 22 for the Raiders, which a lot of people wanted to skewer Doug Marone for on that 4th-and-1, and I get it. Like, there's, I don't know, 8 minutes left and 2 points. I'm kind of with you. I think you could go either way on that, and I didn't mind that they had, you know, Oakland had only scored 19 points to that point, and they had plenty of three and outs. I felt like it wasn't
30th ranked offense in the league. You figure the last thing a defense is going to do is give up big plays that result in a touchdown and put the game away.
My problem with
the they drive and kick a field goal, and you get the ball with 4.5 minutes left, down 5.
My problem with a lot of the fourth down discussion and the complaining about it isn't that it's wrong, it's that they seem to have seized upon the opportunity every time, and I think it dilutes the message. I think if you're holding this to this type of fourth down to the same standard as some of the other ones where it's a little less arguable, you're sort of diminishing your own message here, especially when, you know, look, fourth down guys don't have the numbers yet. Like, these guys that are, they're saying that there's percentages, but you know, a lot of that stuff is very suspect statistics as far as I'm concerned. There's the
Are you talking ahead, about sir. People who are commenting on Twitter and internet message boards and holding them like, to a standard of well, you know, this dilutes the importance of my message if I harp on it every single time.
It's fair enough. It's also it's also the WGR guys, and it's people who, you know, have, like, serious blogs that write about it. And I'm used to the baseball community where, like, people have been doing this for 20 years with advanced stats, and they sort of, like, when they're talking about, you know, FIP and WAR and stuff, at least they sort of know what they're talking about. I feel like a disservice is being done by sort of just saying, well, the math definitely says he should have definitely gone for it on fourth and one with 8 minutes, because it doesn't. There's a huge standard deviation with a lot of this stuff. So, when you have a game like this where you lose by 2 points, you need to take some of that with a grain of salt. So I don't know. I think that's why that's why as the driver of the podcast, I've steered away from fourth down. We could talk about it every week. It just wouldn't be productive because I don't even think we'd learn anything. I think we would just sort of be like, some people would say yes and some people would say no. And
we should really just have the fourth down podcast and break down every fourth down across the league every week and debate about which ones we should go for and which ones they shouldn't have. That'd be hilarious.
You think you're being funny? People would listen to that and they would love it. They would. That would destroy on iTunes if we did that. Now, if you have the stomach for it, maybe I do too.
Yep. Welcome to Buffalo Bills, fourth and go?
Yeah, fourth and go. Fourth and go, question mark, right.
Yep.
Okay, so what else do we want to... It's a terrible game. I mean, I don't know. What else do you want to say about it? Like,
go to listener comments?
Let's do three-star... Let's get out of the game and then go to comments, because some of the comments are going to be a little more... they're like the season wrap-up comments. Yeah, big picture. Kyle Orton's a terrible quarterback. I don't know that anyone can say he's not.
Yeah, I think Orton's bad. The run game needs help. The offensive line needs help. Pray to God the defense hasn't peaked and that they can re-sign key players, and that about sums up the impressions of the game. Good news again, Khalil Mack is an incredible football player. It's nice to see for the city of Buffalo, but it was not nice to see that yesterday.
Yeah.
We might be talking about Khalil Mack in a couple seconds here.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it. Let's go ahead and do three stars, and then we'll have some discussions about the bigger picture of this disgusting picture.
Okay. So I was thinking about honorable mentions. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, would I like to give one to Fred for getting 93 yards, maybe, on the receptions, but given that he only got 10 on the carries, it's kind of tough. So I'm just gonna, no honorable mentions. No one really performed well enough to deserve it. I mean, maybe.
So you're just mentioning that there's no honorable mentions. That's all.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Okay. Yes. And then your third star is going to be the aforementioned Latavius Murray, 23 carries for 86 tough yards, slogging through the middle of the Bills' defense, hanging onto the ball, keeping their offense on track, also added 3 catches for 22 yards. And, you know, you can kind of, this could be a Latavius McFadden if you wanted to. You wanted to add in Darren in there because he was the lightning to the thunder and had just the 9 carries for 54 yards. But I think the Raiders' run game was really the biggest difference in the game, I think, because neither quarterback played really well. I mean, they both had their moments, but neither one really dominated. And when that happens, you look to what the other half of the offense does, and the Bills rushing offense did nothing, and the Oakland rushing offense did just what they needed to do. They basically did the Bills offense from last week, which is get close enough to get to the field goal range and then have Janikowski kick a couple. And
I'd like to tell you a little... you didn't know who Latavius Murray was, and if you want, I have some information.
I feel like, do you want me to do second? Do you want me to finish?
Oh, yeah, let's finish the stars. Yeah, because I just, you know, I feel like we could get to know Latavius Murray after three stars.
I'm going to let you finish, but Latavius Murray is the best no-name back to get the Bills full time.
Well done.
Thank you.
So your second star, and I was kind of going back and forth here, I'm going to give that one to Khalil Mack. 5 tackles with a sack and a tackle for loss, but also 3 QB hits. I think he was a disruptive force for the offense. Chantrell Henderson, when he wakes up sweating in the middle of the night and he can't get out of bed and he's slowly looking under like the dust cover, just a giant 7 foot tall, 350-pound man, and he can't look under the bed because he's so terrified of what's underneath it. What's underneath it is Khalil Mack. Because it's just It was a terrible performance by Shaun Chol Henderson. Khalil Mack made him look stupid. I'm really, like, obviously we didn't really need a linebacker this year, but I saw it on film. He looked fantastic. He's played really well. He graded out great at Pro Football Focus. He had a great game.
Are we going to name this episode Khalil Mack is under Shontrell Henderson's bed?
Maybe. It's a leading candidate, certainly.
So then that leaves your first star up for grabs, and it has to go, again, to the Raiders' defense. So I gave it to Charles Woodson for, you know, he talks a lot, and his better days are behind him, but six tackles, a pass deflection, an interception, and then the recovery of the onside kick to seal the game. You know, a leader of really a, again, like, all the Raiders players were talking about it after the game. You know, they're not giving up. And, you know, it's like one of these things where it's like you kind of talk about it, and it's like what guys always say after a loss or after they lose a couple games, like, we're not giving up. But really, if you were the Raiders, you definitely could have given up. Like, you were 0-12. Like, their season was over. Like, all of you, pretty much everyone who wasn't making, you know, $10 million a year on the Raiders, your job's in jeopardy. And I think they played, to a certain extent, like it. They played like they sort of believed in what was going on, like, even if their results weren't quite showing yet. And good for them, and I put that a little bit on some of the veteran leaders, like your Charles Woodsons, if you want. So that's why I give him the first star. And no Bills, because you all suck.
I think, like you said, Fred was the only one who was even in legit running for it.
Latavius Murray.
But maybe DeNorris. Cersei played a good game. I'll shout out for DeNorris.
All right. He had a decent game. He was fine.
Watkins had an okay day. He just, like, they didn't throw him the ball enough.
I mean, yeah. I mean, three catches on seven targets.
That's it. Like, everybody who did well on the Bills was like, eh.
Yeah, basically. I mean, Robert Woods had, like, 7 out of 9, but then he also had that terrible, like, basically a fumble that almost cost
right.
us.
Right. So if the Bills had kicked a field goal to win the game at the end, would any of them have been stars? I guess you would have had to give some. I would have given.
I think you'd have to give one to Carpenter there. Carpenter. But that would be it. Yeah.
For the 54 yarder, like, definitely. Yeah.
You could have named the stars Carpenter, Sanborn, and Schmidt in that scenario, maybe. The guy that. Yeah. The snapper, the holder, and the kicker.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was a pretty terrible performance from both teams. I think Oakland was just a little bit better at home, so that's why they get the majority of the stars. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Latavius Murray is 24 years old, and he's from Onondaga, New York. He's from Nedgero, New York, on the eastern central part of the just past the Finger Lakes. He was a All-State running back, where in his last year he was named the 2007 Gatorade Football Player of the Year in the state of New York after rushing for 2,194 yards with 28 touchdowns, but also recording 78 tackles, 3 forced fumbles, and 2 interceptions on defense as an outside linebacker. Played for Central Florida, was named the 2010 Liberty Bowl MVP, was drafted in the 6th round by the Raiders, and then ran up all on the Bills. So, I mean, he one has of these some days, talent.
One of these days we'll do the all no-name running backs team. We'll bring in Brandon Bolden.
Yep, it's fine. Brandon Bolden was the first one I thought of. Yeah.
There have been a couple, but it's so easy to forget their names because they're all terrible running backs.
Right, because they almost always go right back to being terrible the next week.
Yeah, they're very rarely is it like the breakout game. Yeah,
yeah. So sixth round, 181st first pick overall in 2013. Didn't debut until this year though. You know, he was getting a lot of that whatever you need to learn as a running back taken care of on the Raiders last year. So that's how good he is. Yep.
Do you hear a little?
Yeah, I heard a little buzz there.
Stop it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Frank is buzzing. I think Scott and I are okay.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah, I think it's you, Frank. You should just stop talking altogether.
Yep, Scott and I will take over from here on.
All right, I'm gonna see if I can log out and try and get back in. That's what she said.
Let's do that. Me and Paul keep tap dancing. So Paul, you know, we could do some of those listener comments if you wanted. I could start with, so I didn't think there were 6 separate comments. There were just, there was just a conversation that went 6 messages between me and
Right. Oh, actually it went 7 because we had 6 from Steve and then Chris chimed in about 7 hours ago.
On the wall, so to speak.
Yes, on the wall. But yeah, we can start, and there are some good things in here to go, you know, we can talk. It kind of goes the EJ issue, EJ next week, and the re-signings issue, and then the QB upgrades in the offseason, the O-line. I mean, there's some good stuff here we can just run with, I think, that Steven put out there. So, so Steven, thank you for preparing our agenda for us as far as the meat of the episode goes.
Very good. Is this any better, gentlemen?
Oh, yeah, no buzz.
It is better.
Okay, cool. I'm glad that when we're all online, we can do that. We can just sort of log out, and it appears to just do that. You learn something new.
Otherwise, it's just me talking to myself.
Well, I would pay to hear that. So you guys are reading the comments. Please go ahead. I'll just butt out. Tell me when it's my turn.
I'll hang up and listen to you. No, sorry.
Here.
I'll start with Reza's. So we were kind of talking a little bit about whether the offense, you know, what the general manager and the front office's assessment of Kyle Orton and the offense is. Do they think that this is acceptable / will it get better, or do they think they need to have wholesale changes? And I think they're obviously not thinking that it's acceptable, but I think they have overlooked how important the offensive line is to a certain extent, and I think that's starting to catch up with them. He said that yesterday was exactly what he was afraid of, and that good defenses are great and can certainly keep you in the game, something our defense has done on more than a few occasions this year. But at the end of the day, your offense has to be able to show a bit of life when it's needed. Also, until the QB situation is figured out, I am not sure if we can even fairly assess Nate Hackett. He says he was reading a funny tweet that he kind of agreed with, something along the lines of, wanting Hackett to call creative plays with Kyle Orton is like handing your plumber a spoon to unclog the pipes, then yelling at him for doing a crappy job. I don't know if that was...
Which I've actually done before, you know.
Yelling or cleaning out the pipes?
They're giving a plumber a spoon. Yeah. Oh, okay. I try and get him to clean out the pipes, and he just eats all my pudding. Sorry. I don't even know if that's bad enough to sigh at. I don't even think it rises to that level of bad. Anyway, sorry.
I'll just ignore it and move on. Yeah. Anyway, no, I think he makes a good point about Hackett, though. I will say, you know, obviously, to a certain extent, you can camouflage some of Orton's misgivings with a good offensive coordinator, and he's obviously limited in what he can call when Orton's still learning the playbook. But I still don't feel like I've seen enough creativity in the run game and in the, you know, the short passing game, misdirections, using Watkins and using Goodwin. Like, again, like a couple weeks ago, they had, you know, Flash running some end arounds and some reverses, and it's like, and then they just stopped. It's like it was in one game and not in any other games. And it's just like, well, maybe there was something he saw in that particular defense, but it seems as though once you put it on film, like, and you feel confident that your team can run it, maybe it'll work well enough at least once or twice against another team, especially when you're getting, you know, 1 yard a carry in your run game. But maybe that's just me.
It is a good question, and Eric Wood was on the radio today talking about, they had asked him specifically about the 3rd and 10 where they threw it to Robert Woods for 3 yards and he gets tackled, and the host is like, I don't get it, why are you only throwing it 3 yards? And he says, well, some of that is, this is getting to Hackett's play calling. He goes, that was a design play where there was blockers on the other side of the field, and the hope was when you have certain types of defenses that press you or come back, you can get underneath and then get the block, and that we just didn't execute it. So there's a fair question that, like, how much of this is Hackett and how much is this the plumber with a spoon? I don't know. I feel like with the Green Bay and the Denver game, I've come to back off of my Hackett dislike a little. I still think he's not very good. They're not getting the job done, but I think that maybe he wasn't quite as bad as I had thought he was.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, I'm still not a fan of Hackett. I still wouldn't mind if they fired him the offseason. I'd be like, meh, no big loss. But I don't think he's the primary issue. I think, you know, the good a blow up wouldn't be a bad idea, because I think the talented players you have under contract next year. Yeah, Fred might be at the end of the line, but he was a top performer on offense yesterday. You've got Woods under contract for another year, 2 years, I think. You've got Sammy Watkins under contract. You've got the rights to Chris Hogan. You've got Marquise Goodwin under contract. You don't really need anyone else. The two best of your crappy line have been Eric Wood and Cordy Glenn, and you've got them under contract as well. So if you replace every single other person besides the ones I mentioned, it's probably going to be an upgrade at those respective positions. You know, so I think, you know, blowing it up is not a bad idea. And if they're going to stay the course with Hackett, they're going to need to make changes at the quarterback position, at the running back position, you know, because Spiller is Well, we'll talk more about CJ later, I'm sure. But, you know, either that or you have to promote Bryce Brown to a more prominent role and let him try and win that job. And you've got to make some changes on the offensive line, because it was kind of funny earlier in the year when the Bills were 5-3 and our line was terrible. But when that line is a major reason you lose to Oakland and miss a chance at the playoffs going into Week 17, that's something that's got to be addressed.
There's a good comment here from maybe next year that says, we will probably talk some Maroon tomorrow, but mostly QB, judging by Frank's rage during the game today. Defense may get a little too full of themselves after two spectacular performances. Two's misspelled. I don't know who would do that. That and Darius being out hurt them. So let's talk about the quarterback, unless you guys did while I was off the air. Steven says we should start EJ. 91% of Buffalo Rumblings contributors and people then commenters say that according to their official poll that they should start EJ. Will you see AJ Emanuel on Sunday, and what can he possibly do in one game to make anybody feel better?
I don't think we want to necessarily feel better, and sorry to jump in, Scott, but I just think, what more do we have to learn by Orton? You're not going to exercise the $4.5+ million in his contract, I wouldn't imagine. EJ is at least still a question mark at this point, so if he goes in there and lights it up, good, wow, boy, did he light Patriots. If he goes in there and flames out as we'd expect, at least you've given him a shot in, you know, in a difficult environment, a chance to, he's never played a game in New England, remember, and give him a chance to say, all right, you've sat on the bench for 10, 11 weeks, your coach has generically said you're progressing, are you really progressing? If you are... are you still the potential future of this position? And if not, we got to look for multiple quarterbacks in the offseason instead of just one. I think that's the value in starting EJ next week.
No, I don't think there's much argument at this point.
Sure. I guess maybe my question, though, was, can EJ Manuel do anything? If he lights it up next week, I don't think anyone can really go into the next season saying, well, EJ looks good. And if he shits the bed... well, I don't even think you could really hold that against him, because he hasn't played all year, and they put him in against New England with a team that doesn't really give a shit anymore, probably.
Right, but if he goes in and lights it up against a really good defense in New England, snaps that streak, that's an important enough thing where you have to say, okay, he's a legit shot next year, and we can give him a chance at the starting job. And, you know, yes, you're not going to have that wholesale learning, but because one game is too small a sample size, which is exactly true, which I think is what you're driving at. But that doesn't mean just because one game is too small a sample size that you can't start compiling a larger sample size. And a good base to start that with is a road game against New England, the class of the division for years, in an environment where the Bills have never won. You know, I'd rather see EJ go in and be given a chance to flame out rather than have Kyle go in there and give us what Kyle gives us.
Yeah. Okay. No, I was trying to tease out the conversation a bit. That's
no. I think now that Paul's kind of said that, I think the one kind of hesitation I would have would possibly be that you don't want to, and obviously we won't know this because we're not seeing practice every week, but you don't want to reward EJ for Orton's failures. You don't want to say, well, Orton was terrible, and you're continuing to be on our roster, so therefore...
I think that's what's called Manzelling. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So you, by default, have now been offered a chance to start, and that's all you need to do to earn a chance to start. I don't know. I hope he has done that, but I also would say, to your original point, is it if there's a small chance that you could motivate him to get better by saying, you know what, you haven't even done enough to earn this garbage time start, so to speak, then if you think that'll work, then that's a reason not to start it. But again, that's a lot of speculation because we don't know what he's doing in practice.
That's really good. That actually, I'd like to raise the newsroom that I just watched today where one of the cable channels screwed up and ACN was happy about it. It's like, hey, we didn't get taller, they fell down. And like there's something to that, you know, like let's make sure we, you know, categorize our victories as our own. I mean, I'm with you guys. The reason to start EJ is the reason everyone knows there is to start EJ is that no one's satisfied with Kyle Orton, a quarterback. I don't think that, you know, despite the fact that the line played awful and that there's been struggles with the running game and whatnot, I don't think that even if those things were better, that he would be good enough to take this team anywhere. you start AJ Manuel. If for the, you know, it's the lottery ticket at this point. I think that you really are trying to hit, you know, maybe not the 6-number lottery, but you're trying to hit the 4-number lottery with EJ Manuel. It's a smaller prize, but it's a little easier to get. You know, and it's still like a 10,000-to-1 that he's going to be any good. But you got to, you know, dollar in a dream with him, I say. You're already paying the dollar, so let's dream a little. You know, but I think that the other comments on the line, you know, you want to make sure to save some money for Hughes. I think I saw some comments, and I know Steven wanted to make sure, well, it was a top comment, like, re-sign Hughes. And,
yeah, seriously, good to re-sign, too. And let Spiller go, which I think, I mean, yesterday's numbers were,
well, why did they bring
the injury? But still, like, four rushes for negative 4 yards and 4 catches for 14 yards.
Yeah,
And the fumble, right.
Going to that point, I think if you're Doug Marrone and you want to show a little more smarts, maybe give a credit card for, you start C.J. Spiller next week and see, like, okay, C.J., you're going into a contract year. You're just coming off a miserable, miserable game. And if he's not motivated to, let's put it this way, if with that motivation of knowing that his next contract and potentially millions of dollars are at stake against the Patriots, if he can't go and rev it up next week, then he's probably just never going to.
It could be a question of depending.
Never going to with the Bills. I'm sorry. He's going to do what Marshawn and Travis McGee all did before him. When he leaves the Bills, but he won't do it for the Bills.
Father lots of children across the country?
Yes.
Well, that was just Travis Henry. Okay,
thank
sorry.
Thank you for asking. Sorry.
Okay.
That's my Marshawn.
Well, no, but I guess with CJ, if you were to play him, it could come down to, depending on how the Hughes negotiations contract, it could be a question of who you franchise. You could say, like, we are really done with you, CJ Spiller. We don't really care for you, so we're going to use this franchise tag to, you know, make sure Jerry Hughes stays around for one more year. But if you can get the Hughes deal done and or Spiller show something, maybe it's worth keeping him for one more year until you have a little more draft flexibility and you can sort of force the issue by, you know, slapping the tag on him. It's a little bit of an overpay, but we've talked a couple of times about how there's going to be a little bit of cash available starting next year for the Bills. And if there's no big quarterback to sign, then that might be, you know, not a bad use of that money for
just,
1 year.
Just to make it official,
as
of right now. Sorry, Scott, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it depends a lot on the agents, because some agents really don't respond well to that kind of threatening to a certain extent. And honestly, I think also the other thing is, because I feel like CJ's agent is telling him, like, you're a talented guy and you can command a lot on the open market. And given the way the running back position has gone in the NFL the last couple of years, the guys are not making $10, $15 million a year at your kind of franchise tag running back. Like, I don't know what the number would be, but it's not going to be that much, especially not given that he just got injured this year and he's going to want some financial security. So I think CJ's on the way out. It's just but I think it would be pretty awesome to have Marrone tell CJ, like, you're getting 35 carries on Sunday, 35 touches. Now, you want to make some money in the offseason, give me 200 yards.
Yep.
And see what happens.
Your shoulder's not our problem anymore.
I'd love to see that happen. And we'll talk about the numbers more in the offseason, I'm sure. But yeah, this year, $25.11 million is what the Bills had in dead cap space. $20 million of that was Fitzpatrick, Stevie, and Mark Anderson. Next year right now, as of today, they're about $1.8 million in dead space going into next year. They've cut Mike Williams as of today officially, so there's 7.2 that's not going to be on your cap right there. So, you know, it's you're in a good – excuse me, 6.8 that's not going to be on your cap. You're in good position going the offseason. I think you do give some of that money to Searcy, who's going to have a reasonable salary. I think as frustrated as I was with Hughes, he has had a good season. I'm a little upset, you know, my micro perspective of yesterday is affecting my macro perspective. That maybe it's a good idea to pay him. Whether or not you should franchise him, give him that top five salary, maybe a transition tag might be the better way to go, if that still exists.
I don't know. I don't know if that still exists. You know what your problem, though, with your 35 carry theory is? To make him play really hard next week if you told him that on Wednesday or Thursday. On Friday, his agent would be like, maybe you should slip or something. And he would just fall down in practice and be like, I can't go, coach. Sorry. You know, I'm not.
If he does 35 touches and gets 285 yards, he's probably made himself X number of millions more than he would have otherwise. So
might could be, but I don't know. It depends on how he feels about that shoulder. But he came back. I mean, he had really, if he had never come back, he would have been in a better position. But I guess that we're being too cynical. Perhaps he really wanted to help Buffalo, and it just didn't work out that way. Did we get to Chris's comment about should have signed Tebow?
If you looked at the free agent quarterbacks, the best one is Brian Hoyer.
Yeah.
So I wanna laugh. You know, Chris's question off the cast, but really, I mean, hey, people laughed when they signed Flutie, and he was the last quarterback who was a starter the season the Bills went to the playoffs. So,
yeah, you know,
what the hell do you have to lose, really? Sure, you have some media showing upon the team, but if he's terrible and you cut him, you cut him and you move on. But this goes to Steven's third comment too, which is like, chance of an upgrade in the offseason is slim to nil. You know, you'd have to. It's the opposite of the running back position where there are a dime a dozen. You can get a bargain on one for a good amount. Quarterback, I mean, look at the salaries that Andy Dalton and Joe Flacco make just for being slightly above average. I mean, anyone who's slightly above average is going to get sewn up to a long-term deal or a ridiculous amount, which is why no one, literally no one, is going on the market from the quarterback position next year. So that's going to make it very tough, and that's what is going to give EJ, I think, by default, another shot. I mean, what the heck, bring in Tebow, bring in every has-been you can, at least for a tryout, you know, see him run through drills. What do you have to lose?
Well, you don't have to have a has-been, and that actually brings us to a topic I want to talk about. Jay Cutler can be had for money, it sounds like, and it's certainly, like, worth discussing at this point. And from what I was reading about today and listening to today, this year was his biggest hit, was his, like, $18 or $19 million year, and from here on it gets down to $15 million a year or something, which, as Paul says, like, that's going to be the going rate for anything above average, and Cutler certainly has flaws with his game. He's a turnover machine, but he can also throw the ball very hard at the person's hands, and they catch it sometimes. So he has a good amount of skill, and if it's not going to cost you any draft picks or anything, you know, ridiculous with regards to draft pick, it's just going to be a matter of eating some of his cash. The other downside would be that he has to be your quarterback until 2020. I think that's how long his contract lasts. But if the Bears are done with him, is it worth, you know, spending money? I think $58 million of his contract is guaranteed. Is it worth it to go after a guy like him who is out of favor with his club, but certainly an upgrade over Kyle Orton? Scott, what do you think?
I think I'm going to I'm gonna slowly use some cliches about him trying hard and stuff to buy me some time, because
hey, Paul, what do you think?
Hard question.
I'll talk about the color thing. Yeah, the cap number this year was $18.5 million, and if the Bears were to cut him before June 1st, they would be on the hook in dead space for $24.5 million. So the Bills, who had the most dead space of any team this year, Jay Cutler would do that on his own if the Bears cut him now. So it's not going to happen. Next year's cap hit it's high. It's $16.5 million, but for a guy you're assuming is a starting quarterback, that's well within range. And whereas last week I'm like, Cutler, it's a turnover machine. That's one thing that hurts an elite defense. After yesterday's game, and I know I'm prone to the overreaction as much as anyone, I'm like, why not? You know, he can be had. It's $16.5 million next year. It's going to get easier to cut him by like 2017, so it's really a two-year commitment. 2017, the dead money would only be $2 million on the cap. So, you know, take a flyer, I guess. I have no issue with it.
Big flyer.
Yeah, but I mean, what are the alternatives? If you know, it's the same reason you might believe in God, lack of a meaningful alternative. But, you know,
go see Life of Pi today, available on DVD. Not to give away that movie. Okay, but go ahead.
So I would guess, this got metaphysical real quick.
What happens when I look like a surrealistic Norwegian painting?
And the Bills lose, and we all go right for the Kafka. Just
which, by the way, I'm looking at the camera now. I do not see Frank. I hear a voice.
Walked away. Okay. I walked away. I went to get a little wine.
Oh, there he is. All right.
Yeah, he's getting winded. He's gotta stay active.
Well, on my Fitbit, I'm almost to 10,000 steps, so I just am trying to get to, you know.
Good man. Anyway. This is the ultimate question to a certain extent, is what do the Bills think they have in this team? Do they think that they have a defense that is Super Bowl caliber? Like, not just a defense. I mean, I think it's good enough to be a contributing player on a Super Bowl team, but is it so dominant with the...
Not the 2000 Ravens, or the...
But if you get Pico Alonso and Jerry Hughes and another year of this defense kind of solidifying, is it close? Is it that kind of defense, and therefore, do you want just a game manager kind of quarterback who could probably get it done, and maybe Kyle Orton's that guy? Probably not, but is Jay Cutler that guy? Maybe not. Or do you think that is your plan that the defense isn't that good and you're going to need to score some points, and then that's another reason why maybe you do go with Cutler? Or maybe you think that the defense is not that good and it's going to fall apart in the next year or two, so you don't want to, and you want to think about who your long-term quarterback is going to be, and is Cutler that guy? So there's a lot of – Cutler could be the answer to a couple of those questions, but he could also be the wrong answer to all those questions to a certain extent. So yeah. It's really hard to kind of see how he fits in with this team, and it depends a lot on what you think of EJ, and I think it depends on what Terry Pegula thinks of EJ, because he's the one who's going to be paying him and calling.
Yeah, way to take a position, Scott. I like it. That was
some spectacular avoidance.
No, it's fine. Well, I think that you hit on all, we all hit on the stuff. The thing that scares me about Cutler isn't that. A lot of that stuff, it's that you're locked in for so long with him that you're going to be either paying him and to not be on the team in 2017, 18, 19, and 20 if he doesn't work out, or, you know, that he just, that's just a lot of money, right? Like, it's like a ton of money for a guy that you already know he has issues. It's just slightly better. And he might be the wrong kind of quarterback. I think that for my money, I might be more willing to, I feel like you might be in better shape trying to re-sign defensive guys this year, solidify the defense, and put up with one more bad year of quarterbacking, you know, kind of punt next year. I don't know, like, you're that close, but you can't, you know, upset the apple cart to get something, because I think you're going to throw the balance off if you really start trying to move things around and get a quarterback that can play next year, unless one falls in your lap, like I don't know, like, if the Bears want to eat half the contract or something, then that might be the kind of I don't even know if you can do that in football. I know in baseball you can, but I don't know if in football you can eat the contract that way. That might be worth it, but I don't know. It's
you
kind
can
of
renegotiate the contract so that I think some of it ends up going into guaranteed money that's paid by the team under signing bonuses, and then the salary is lowered accordingly, so you have the same kind of effect. But I don't know how much of that you can agree to.
Okay.
And have it still be legal to a certain extent.
Right, yeah. Because if he was like, he had 3 years left or something, I'd be like, great, I can live with this for 3 years. And if he's bad, 3 years is 3 years. He's not going to be so bad. He's certainly going to be an upgrade in the immediate future. But you don't want to have Jay Cutler around for a long time. And I guess that's sort of, if you don't feel like you want him around for a long time, why are you spending all this money on him, at least from my perspective? Okay, so quarterbacks screwed. Coaching,
you know, the O-line is the next question that Stephen had, and I already chimed in on that. Williams,
yeah, we did that one. Yeah,
Williams mediocre, Richardson, Quanjo below average, and then Cordy's regressed. I think if you, again, you could replace all, well, you can't replace Wood because of his contract. You could replace the other four, at least three of those guys. I think you need to replace at least three of those guys just to have a competent line, a middle of the road, slightly below average line next year.
Yeah. So, and I looked at free agent guards. Mike Iupati, who's actually pretty good and is still young, is going to be coming up for free agency. And then again, so the Niners might try and re-sign him, but obviously they're going to be in flux.
Right. And I think you're looking at guard. I want to see maybe a Brian Bulaga if you could get him.
Yeah.
He's a tackle, isn't he? Though, isn't he?
Oh, is he a tackle? You're right. He is a tackle. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah,
even still, I wouldn't mind. You could use the Bills, right. Could use at least one tackle. You want to get Brian Bulaga.
No, and stick him at guard. I mean, he'd be better than frickin' Pierce.
I'm pretty sure we could have drafted Brian Bulaga, by the way. I'm 99% sure that he was available on the draft board for the Bills.
Yeah, he was right. He was the 23rd pick in that draft.
I think that was the Spiller year.
That was the Spiller year, yep.
Great.
Okay, go ahead.
And then also Dan Connolly, longtime New England guard, getting a little up there in age, but theoretically coming up. And then also Rob Sims from Detroit, also a little bit older. No one who's really like any like big names, like Willie Colon, again, kind of old, but you know, obviously for the Jets. Darren College, part of Miami's revamped line. You know, so there's a couple guys on here, but they're, you know, again, you can get half decent. Any one of these guys would be an upgrade over, you know, the turnstiles we currently are starting. Like Greg Urbick, like I remember a couple years ago saying, like, if he's the worst guy on your offensive line, like that's okay. He has continued to get worse. So now he is the worst guy by far, and he's also not, he's not an NFL guard anymore as far as I'm concerned. Eric Wood is now at the point where it's like, if he's the worst guard, you know, player on your line, maybe you're okay. Because he has looked pretty terrible the last couple weeks.
Yeah, he has. And it's, I think that's goes into Steven's question about what happened to the... oh, no, he asked about the run defense, not the running game, sorry. But it certainly has a lot to do with all the offensive problems.
And we talked about the run defense. We'll see what they... You know, they just got beat yesterday. We'll see how they do against New England.
So do we want to talk about whether this is an improved team or a good team? Do you guys want to wait till after next week? I mean, I don't know. I feel like...
Yeah,
I
think to fully address Steven's question there, we need another week's... Because let's face it, the game against New England is going to be big for assessment. If they could end on a shocking high note after the letdown this week, and you're looking at, yeah, they had a huge letdown at the end that was extremely costly, but they also knocked off two of the top three teams in the NFL the last 3 weeks. Well, then, you know, you've got something to talk about there.
Do you think Marone's – okay, how about this? Do you think Marone's future is set right now regardless?
Yeah, win or lose, they're not going to get rid of a coach who's given – the best record to the franchise that they've had in a decade.
In 10 years?
It's kind of an interesting question because, they were talking about a lot of the... You know, we've mentioned a couple times over the course of the year the issues between the front office and the coach. I think that that dynamic is yet to play out, and I think it'll be interesting if they both come back in the offseason. And given the way that the franchise has kind of anointed Whaley, the once and future king, it'll be interesting to see if he's allowed to continue to make all the decisions and how he views Marone in terms of implementing his plan for the franchise. Because again, that, you know, I think Marone, you know, you could kind of read between the lines. He was pretty pissed about the O-line, and I'd imagine he would want to go out and spend some money to get two guards and a right tackle who's, you know, a capable replacement for Henderson.
Right.
But, you know, is Whaley thinking more that it's Orton's fault and that, you know, he would have let EJ keep going out there? You know, it's, I think on performance, Marone, you know, I kind of agree with, I think it was Steven's comment where he said, like, I want to fire him because I don't think he's really that good, but I don't know if I have enough cause for firing because he hasn't done anything worth firing him over. Like, the team has sort of gotten better this year to a certain extent. Just, you know, maybe it's the schedule, maybe it's just a one-off thing, but it's really hard to say, like, well, you got better this year, so get out. So in that sense, it's I think the performance thing is part, you know, that's one way that he gets fired, but or that's one reason, but I don't think that's enough to be the entire reason. I think he needs to have some problem with the front office, too, if he's going to leave.
See, now, I think under normal circumstances you'd be right, but you have the wild card of the Pegulas or the new owners of this team, and they've not really been the people that made any of these decisions in the first place. And when you're the brand new owner, I think you have the right to say, just period, like, I don't believe that this was good. I believe that this was better than the other year, but it wasn't good enough for us. And we are the Pegulas, and we are going to go. And so if your objective is, let's go get, you know, a much better coach if one is available, one like a proven coach, like a Tom Coughlin who might be available or something, and say, we're going to go get this guy to come to Buffalo and do it, or you know, Jim Harbaugh is almost certainly going to be available, and he might be a big enough name to replace Marone with, and just say, we're going for what we believe is a wholesale upgrade, and thanks for trying, but it wasn't good enough. you know, and Whaley, as much as, you know, he's the anointed king of the last, you know, ruling military party, frankly, the Wilson, you know, the Wilson military group. Yeah, precisely. And now we have the Baratheons are in town, and so they have somebody else in mind, or they want to do something else. They might not. I mean, if they follow their Saber's plan, they won't get rid of the people immediately. They'll let them do a little bit of work, probably while they learn the business of football a bit better. So I don't know, but I do think that if they want to, they could definitely come in and just say, you know, we are gonna change it all up because that's what we want to do, and that they would sort of be in a clean slate mode. They'd be able to do that, and you know, all that stuff at the beginning of the year was for a reason. Everybody was freaked out about their job, and at the end of the day, they didn't make the playoffs. So I don't know. It's an interesting question, and something that, whatever happens, I think I'd be surprised if they cleaned house this at the end of the year, but I wouldn't be completely shocked. It would be surprising, but it wouldn't be like as surprising as it might have been.
Wouldn't be coming out of nowhere.
Would not be coming out of nowhere. No, precisely. My guess is that some people keep their jobs, and some of the I think Nate Hackett might be gone, but I don't know. Then you're talking about your third. He was here. He's been here 2 years now, so we'll see. But let's say Marone goes ahead and says, "Hey, you're right." Then they go, "Let's get some guards and tackles." Then maybe he convinces them. And by the way, Orton is the better quarterback right now, and all he needed was some guards and tackles, and that's what we're gonna. That he'll be fine now. I mean, you could be, if you buy into some of that stuff, you could end up buying into the whole thing. You could see a scenario where everybody comes back. I don't know. It's kind of scary. That's an encouraging note for everyone, that everybody might be back.
Yay.
Paul, do we have a This Day in Bills History?
We do, and I decided to choose one where the Bills get knocked out of the playoffs, so I think that was the way to go.
All right, I'm gonna guess 1.5 Bills are dead at the end of this.
I'll take if they were getting knocked out of the playoffs, it couldn't have been that, you know, far away. So maybe under. I'll take.
Okay.
Let's see. I think I'd have to look at the full. All these people, to my knowledge, are alive, or I don't know what's going on with them. Could go either way. Although Eddie Robinson's always been dead to me.
All right. Here we go.
We're gonna go back to. December 22nd, 2002, the Buffalo Bills, 6.5-point underdogs to the, I think at the time, 10-4 Green Bay Packers. Cold, windy day, 21 miles an hour, 28 degrees in Green Bay. Within the first drive of the game, this was the omen that would set it for the Bills. The Bills force... do a great job of forcing a turnover on the opening possession for the Packers and get the ball at the 10-yard line. Then, on the first play, Drew Bledsoe throws an interception. Mm-hmm. So, that was the closest the Bills would get to scoring, really, during this game. Vonnie Holiday had a record-setting day for the Packers. He sacked Drew Bledsoe 5 times, forcing him to fumble on 3 of them. The Bills turned over the ball a total of 6 times.
Yep.
The Packers were 11-3 going into this game. The Packers wound up being the only NFL team to win all of its home games that season. The Bills had one play late in the game where it looked like they were about to pull it off. They were down 3-0. There was a pass to, and I'm going to try to read this quickly because where the heck is it in here? I remember it was being mentioned by Nate Clements. Nate Clements picked up a ball that was on the ground that was clearly a fumble after Mon Green had fumbled, and the referees called it an incomplete pass. On the next play, Brett Favre threw an 11-yard touchdown to Donald Driver with 7:23 remaining. That was all she wrote. A 3-0 lead becomes a 10-0 Packers victory. It was the game that dropped the Bills to 7-8 that year. They would finish in fourth in that conference, with the other three teams all finishing 9-7, probably the tightest the AFC East has ever been. I would guess 1.1 game separating fourth from third, second, and first. And before I give the trivia question, I will note the reason I chose this game was the second last game of the year, and it was a game that knocked them out of the playoffs. So it was the most similar feeling game that I could get to this game. Mm-hmm. I remember how I felt that day, largely how I feel today. It was the division was up for grabs. The Bills could have gone into a four-way tie for 9-7. Could have been something. Instead, it was nothing. Some interesting tidbits about this game, just because I saw some names I hadn't seen forever. Charles Johnson, one catch for 22 yards. Jay Reimersma, I believe in what was his last season with the Bills? He played a couple more. That was his last season with the Bills before he went to Pittsburgh. Dave Moore, the tight end, who I remember because Thurman Thomas, when he was an alcoholic, was yelling because they gave him Andre Reed's number, even though that's common because the 80s are very common numbers. Travis Henry, 20 carries, 46 yards. Larry Sanders and Sammy Morris had carries. All of this is to set up a question. I mentioned Vonnie Holiday had five sacks for the Green Bay Packers. His record broke the Packers club record of four sacks set by this not only former Packer, but former Buffalo Bill. Good luck.
It's a fairly easy question, actually. As we all know, the most famous former Packer, former Bill is James Lofton. So I'm going to go with James Lofton, wide receiver.
Bold guess.
I remember this game. Go ahead, Scott. I was going to vamp.
No, remember it. I'm actually thinking.
Okay, good. Well, I was going to say that I remember this game because I didn't watch it. I didn't sit and watch this game. This was like I was newly home from law school. 2002 was my first year in law school, and I was like, that day my mom needed me to go do stuff, so we were doing chores. I was listening to the game in the radio, and then we'd be in the mall, and I remember like specifically stopping in like Sears and watching the game for 5 minutes and being frustrated that once again they didn't score. Down 3-0 for most of the game, it was well within their grasp. And then to have them, you know, be 8-8 with a game out of the playoffs, basically. And the division win, by the way, it was incredibly frustrating. So I do remember this game strangely for the fact that I wasn't actually watching it directly. I have a lot of these late December games where I'm like, I gotta be driving around and watching stuff. I remember a Giants game that was the same way. They should have beat the Giants and they didn't. Go ahead. I apologize.
So I had some time to think about it, and I think it's this one was a little tougher than last week. So I'm not 100%. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking that it might be, Uroš II, Grand Prince of Serbia.
Mm.
I was thinking about, and then it occurred to me, what about Jules René Bourguignat, who was a 19th century French malacologist? But then I was thinking it, and I was like, it's not, but Bourguignat never played for the Packers. He only played for the Bills. So yeah, it probably wasn't him. And so that's when I was like, but there was something about it, and you know what it was? It's actually what it is Theodoxys marisi, which I'm sure you guys remember is a species of small freshwater snail, an aquatic gastropod that, normally is found in Algeria and Morocco, just that 8-millimeter shell with the operculum. And I think that's going to be my answer for the former Bill and former Packer.
And strangely, also the 2010 Liberty Bowl MVP,
Theodoxys marisi.
He actually went back to college after playing pro, which is rare. Three. You don't see that.
He was a three-star scout, ranked fourth overall in that genus and species. Before being drafted by Central Florida.
The film Necessary Roughness is based on him, actually.
Yes.
So Jules Bourguignat discovered Theodoxys marisi in Morocco and Algeria, which of course then led to his long career with the Packers and the Bills.
Right.
That's
a much better guess than mine, I gotta say. I feel like Scott probably got this one again.
He's dead on, because it was four. The previous Packers records of four sacks, it was actually co-held by Theodoxys marisi and Bryce Pop.
Okay. The human Bryce Pop.
The human Bryce Pop.
Wasn't Bryce Pop a lion too, or am I wrong?
I think Spielman was the lion.
Chris Spielman was a Bill and a Lion, and he was like...
Right. Yeah. He was the same era.
Right. Those were all bad, you know. The Greg Williams teams are a hazy mess for me.
Actually, Pop was back in the good old Levy days. He got defense player of the year with the Bills. He went from the Packers to the Jaguars to the Vikings.
Okay.
So he had a great career, actually. He was NFL Defensive Player of the Year in 1995, four-time Pro Bowl selection, had 17.5 sacks his first of 3 years with the Bills. So he ended up being a great player. Still lives in Green Bay. He's a Midwestern guy, so he's still hanging out there today. But he was the one whose record was broken. You know, it was interesting, too, in the article about the game that I read, the Bills punter was named Mike Mormon because they didn't yet know who Brian Mormon was in the NFL back then.
Amazing.
Tear to my eye. So that was this day in Bills history. Bills knocked out of the playoffs in Week 16, December 22nd, 2002.
Oh, you know what? I usually look up odds. I usually have these all set, but because the basically over, I didn't pull them up. But I don't think anyone needs odds to pick the game this week. I mean, you got to pick New England, right? It looks like they're probably going to need the game.
It depends on
Bills
tonight.
Foxborough.
It does depend on tonight.
But yeah. Do you think that matters? Do you think that do you think the Patriots are really going to, like, not show up to play the Bills? There's going to be some sort of contract things that are involved. It's going to be like that game against the Colts at the end of the season a few years ago where it was like everybody played for the first half because, like, you got a bonus if you got to 100 catches, and that was how it went down. It'll be at least like that, right? I mean, they'll play against the Bills at least a little.
Oh, they'll play the whole thing. I have no. When is Belichick ever taking it easy on the Bills for any reason?
Yeah,
he's gonna.
Well, had to make sure to. Okay, well, they're 11 point favorites.
I
right
see
now.
11. Yeah,
yeah.
And that's the tough thing. Again, we haven't been picking against the spread all season, and that would be the point of whether or not clearly Vegas doesn't think that we stand much of a chance in this game.
Yeah, so, no, I'll pick against the spread, and I'll still take the Patriots. I think two touchdowns is the minimum. I think they played like shit against the Jets, and even if they don't need the game, they're gonna be expected to play to work out some of those kinks. And I think that they're at least two touchdowns better than a Bills team that with no offensive line and a bunch of people that probably won't give a shit. You're a really good defense, and you've been kicking ass all year, and you're gonna show up against the one guy that really shredded you all year. I guess that's your only motivation is like. We want to show a little bit that last time was a fluke, but you're probably down Darius and maybe down Gilmore, and your offense isn't going to help at all. And so this is I'm going to just 35-17. They're going to get beat silly. Go see The Hobbit. That's my recommendation. Everyone go see The Hobbit: Battle of the Five Armies.
Or watch the interview on Sony's Crackle.
Yes. Is that where it's going to be? Is it going to be on Crackle?
I think I heard that, yeah. That
it's released on Crackle device, so get your Sony Crackle ready. Enjoy the
Good
movie.
Good for them. Good for them in America. Good for America and them.
And the Japanese Film Corporation.
Which is why we release our podcast for free as well, because we're freedom fighters. Just
Absolutely.
Like
that. Yeah. Screw you, North Korea. Unless you did threaten to bomb us or anything, then all hail the tier leader. You make a compelling case, Frank. It's tough to say who is really going to be trying this week for the Bills. Because, I mean, yeah, it's you know, you always want to beat the Pats, and you know, but it's like you also don't want to get injured going into the off season. And yeah, right. You could say that if you're going half speed, you're more likely to get injured. I'd also say that's maybe just a wives' tale, and maybe you don't actually. Have any chance of that happening?
Even if they show up.
Oh, Frank's zooling again.
Yep, Frank's buzzing.
All right, I'll break.
So anyway, Paul, what do you think?
I'll make my pick while Frank's.
Yeah, I'm gonna say. Yeah, no, I'll say like Patriots. I don't think it's gonna be quite that bad. I think we'll cover. I think we'll probably. It'll be like they'll take the foot off the gas. I see like 31. No, I'll say 28-20, something like that.
I pride myself on being a level-headed person that no matter what makes largely emotion irrational-based picks in these games, hence my sub-500 record, despite the fact we don't even pick against the spread. So following along with my typical behavior on this, I am going to, again, pick the Patriots to win big. But I feel like I have the rationale, like, Belichick can usually find a blueprint to beat the Bills in these late season games. And this time he doesn't even need to, because I think Oakland did a good job of outlining what that blueprint was last week. You run the ball up the middle. You keep trying to, you know, you keep running in you on defense. You take advantage of a suspect offensive line. I say New England wins this one. I'm going to say 42-13.
Ooh, boy. Yeah.
Yikes. Okay. That's perfectly feasible. What was Scott's pick?
31 to, what'd you say, 17?
No, I said 28-20.
28-20, that's right, yeah.
I see,
right.
The,
you're going to cover.
The Pats will take the foot off the gas, and I think we might sneak late garbage time touchdown.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, like, there might be the motivation of playing well in New England, right? But, like, that's going to last for about a half, and right up until New England has its first, like, serious punch or counterpunch, you know, where they like get a turnover and score quickly, which they usually do, and all of a sudden Buffalo's down 14. Right about then, it's going to be like, yeah, it's, you know, it's senioritis. It's going to be how I feel at work this week, where like, yeah, I'm not here Thursday and Friday, so I feel like I have vacation brain today, and that's going to be what settles in for the Buffalo Bills. Do we want to just go ahead and say there won't be a podcast next week? Or do you guys want to do one?
I didn't know there wasn't going to be a podcast next. This is news to me.
Yeah, no, I'll be here. I'm working Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so
I have
better to do.
All right, okay, well, we'll do like a Tuesday podcast then. All right, usually we have a little Christmas break, but I guess we're all here, so.
Last year, I think last year's year, Scott and I took the bold step of doing one frankless, which we have not yet replicated, but we did manage to pull it off.
Did you say pantless or frankless? Because I thought we were going to talk about the first one.
Well, yeah. I mean, I do that every podcast. Although what's hilarious is I was literally thinking, I can't wait to take off these pants. It's my first time wearing them. Haven't broken them in yet. Not quite comfortable. These pants are off.
That's exactly what the Bills are going to be saying when they're down 32-6. Cal Williams is going to turn over and go, I can't wait to take these pants off. And that's going to be the name of our podcast. So... we will probably have a show next week, which is a treat for you, because usually we take the holiday off. But you can tweet us your thoughts during the game or at any time, BBillsMNY. Paul will get back to you. You can Facebook us, facebook.com/BBillsMNY. That includes leaving posts and stuff on the front page like a lot of people do, or sending us some private messages if you feel like you want to have a little bit more of a long-form answer and not necessarily throw all your thoughts out there. We'll still read them like we did today. You can email us, bbillsmny@gmail.com. You can go to bbillsmny.wordpress.com, especially if you know why, no matter what happens, I end up buzzing or someone ends up buzzing. I really wish I could explain this. I don't know what it is. I'm sure it's something simple and stupid that I'm doing. So if you're an audio engineer and you want to make $10 or get a $10 Chili's gift card, I will send it to you if you can explain and fix this problem. iTunes.com, you can search us, Buffalo Bills, maybe next year. Scott is giving me an answer as to why. It's inappropriate completely. Scott is a North Korean. I think that's one. Anyway. You can search Buffalo Bills maybe next year on iTunes and Google. You can find us all sorts of places. We are nearing, you want to hear something creepy? We're definitely nearing 100 episodes, right? We haven't quite got to 100 episodes. On our download page total, we're very close to 10,000 total downloads of our podcast.
Wow.
So even at 100 episodes, like that's a sickening number of people who may or may not have listened at some point.
Those porn robots really love the Bills.
Yes. Thank you, porn bots, for your dedication to our podcast.
I feel like it's in like Guantanamo where this is like the torture podcast, and they just, they like are looking, because I read that CIA report and it was really scary how we were one of the footnotes that, you know, they subjected it to our podcast and that's how they got the information. Yeah, that caught Bin Laden.
We didn't read the terms on the Google Hangouts. We did not read that nearly close enough.
Not nearly. Yeah. No. So, but on the other hand, we're happy to have done our part for our country, I guess. Unless you don't agree with that kind of stuff, I don't know.
America.
Yeah, it's all a big murky mess, much like the Buffalo Bills. But that's all I've got for this week. We will definitely be aware of what happened with the Bills and Patriots by the time we talk to you next. I may have more detailed knowledge of The Hobbit than the actual football game, and I will not apologize for that because you're not paying for this. So thank you so much for listening. My name is Frank.
I'm Scott.
I'm Paul.
All right, guys. Have a good night.